Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome back to the Clips Nation podcast. I'm your host, Sabrina Merchant. It's been a while since we've had any new episodes on this feed, but thank you so much for tuning back in for this postseason, which promises to be a historic run for the Clippers. Today, I'll be joined by my friend Joe Morgan of the Sporting News to talk about the Clippers' first-round series against the Mavericks, what went well and what didn't in Game 1, and what to look forward to in Game 2. Without any further ado, here is that conversation. All right, we are joined by Joe Morgan from the Sporting News to talk about Clippers-Mavericks Game 2. Joe, how do you think the Clippers looked in that last game?
I like that you go right to it. No fluff. We're letting it rip. I thought, you know, I have to say, all in all, I actually thought they were fine. So, you know, I think in that first half, when you get out to that big lead at the beginning, what was it, 20-4 or something?
18-2, yeah.
18-2, they're hitting a ton of shots. And eventually that's going to stop. You're going to stop knocking down those jumpers, just the way it's going to be. I think defensively in that first half, allowing, I think, 12 three-pointers from the Mavs, I think that's obviously a lot. You can't have that. But I still think overall they're a much better team than the Mavs. I don't think Dallas can stick with them in a seven-game series. It doesn't concern me that much. The only thing that does concern me, quite frankly, is Luka, who is a problem. So I think Doc mentioned it either yesterday or today about how really the thing that frustrated him was allowing Luka to make the passes that he did to open shooters. That can be a problem. If you allow him to be a playmaker and a scorer the way that he did, I do think that could be a potential issue. But I think all in all, we're coming off of this Lakers game, watching that team versus watching what I watched for the Clippers. The Clippers have so many guys they can throw at you off the bench. It's pretty wild. You know, even like Jamichael Green is in there, and then you have even Landry Shamet. We forget about Landry, but like, you know, Landry is a guy that teams would kill for. So I think the Clippers are going to be fine. I thought they might have looked, you know, maybe a little rusty, I guess, if you can say that, after 8 consecutive games in the bubble, but I think they're fine.
Yeah, it was really interesting because they got off to quite possibly the best start you could hope for, right? You know, Luka turns the ball over 5 times in the first 5 minutes. You're up by 16 points. That defensive intensity is there. It seems like, you know, everyone was saying how this was the worst possible matchup for Dallas just because of the bevy of perimeter defenders that they could throw at him. And just that was all like coming to fruition immediately. And then the tide turns. And I can't figure out if it's just, you know, Luka's really good and you're going to have to subject yourself to the fact that the Mavericks are going to score at times because they are a historically good offense. I mean, I don't think they're the best offense historically, even though their rating says so, just because the offensive numbers are up and whatever. But, you know, they're going to put up points. And our friend Jovan at The Athletic brings this up all the time, that they shot very poorly on threes against the Clippers during the regular season, but that's not going to be the case all the time, right? They've got Seth Curry, they've got Tim Hardaway, they've got a bunch of guys who can knock down shots. I didn't like the way the Clippers managed the rotations in that game. And I understand you have a lot of players, there's a lot of different looks you can go for, and the Clippers have only had their fully healthy lineup for, what, 11 games this entire season? I think 12 games this entire season. So it's to be expected that you're not going to know exactly what to do with all of your rotation when it's available. So I get that, you know, there were some kinks to work out, but I wanted the Clippers to make more of a statement, and they didn't. And I know it's like not that big of a deal. It's game one, whatever, you know, you got the job done. But when you're a title contender, and obviously the Lakers did not do this, the Bucks did not do this, but I feel like you should make a better statement in game one, and they didn't. And I felt a little lacking.
Well, I agree with you. Look, as you make the point about making a statement, I'm not sure if anybody made a statement in the first game.
Maybe the Blazers.
Yeah, maybe the Blazers. Maybe Houston, right? Okay, there might be something there. But, you know, I think it's not like we haven't seen this Clippers team before. So I'm not quite sure what we were expecting. They definitely go through lapses. they definitely go through times where they look kind of lethargic and, you know, we'll see what happens. And then they always find their way back. Like, this isn't like a new Clippers team. We've been frustrated with them during the regular season, you know, pre-pandemic, if you will. So I wasn't expecting them to come in and blow out Dallas. I like the way that Paul George looked a lot. I really thought, look, I think he took a good amount of threes, but when he wasn't, he was getting to the rim. Which I really think is big for them. And then I thought Zoo was like, as you wrote about, you know, was like the highlight of the game. So maybe I'm the positive guy here, which I really like playing this role. I think finding Zoo, like the way that he played, I think is so big for them moving forward, because the number one issue with this team and the number one thing we've been concerned with all year long is can they defend bigs? Do they have the guys who can get it done? And Zoo was fantastic. Not only, he was actually pretty good offensively as well, but defensively he was wonderful. So I think that's kind of what I pulled from this game one, because if I look at that Dallas team, I simply don't believe that they can beat that Clippers team four times. I think it's a five-game series. So I think in a game one, there's going to be some kinks. They're trying to figure it out. I think it was just probably the best case scenario, to be honest with you. However, if you want to talk about Porzingis being chucked for the game in the third, that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah, I'm coming around on the Porzingis thing, just because, like, apparently it is a rule in the NBA rule book that if you do the air punch, it's a technical foul. So they're following the letter of the law. It's a stupid rule. I agree with that. But I think I wrote this today that, like, the ejection was, like, legally correct, but it just seemed to violate the spirit of playoff basketball, you know? Yeah. And that's what bummed me out. I did love his post-game press conference where he was just like, you know, I went through all of the possible scenarios that could happen in my first playoff game. And, you know, getting two technicals and escalating a fight was just not one of them. I wasn't prepared for it.
Well, honestly, I do think Porzingis is a problem. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I've actually been down on him a little bit. And I know, like, the last 25 or 30 games, he was actually fantastic for Dallas. But the way that he's able to bring guys, like, the bigs out of the paint is really, really impressive. And if he's going to be able to knock down those shots and bring everybody out, and it does allow Luka to do his thing. And at the end of the day, look, Luka's an okay shooter from three. He's got those ridiculous, right, those step backs. But if he can get into the paint and create, that's really mm-hmm. what he does best. And I thought Zinger, at the end of the day, really complements what Luka does. So I am curious to see in game two if there's any adjustments that the Clippers make, because – you know, before he was ejected, there was some concern. So I can go back to negative Joe real quick. It wasn't looking that great. I think that has to be the main focus of Doc, even though I think he said the main focus is making sure Luka can't create, but that does tie into Porzingis as well.
Right. I think you make an excellent point that when you can space the floor like that with Porzingis, you know, out on the perimeter, it just gives Luka so many options, right? Because I'm sure the Clippers would rather force him into just being a scorer, because he's a much less accomplished score, even though he put up, what, 42 points, at an NBA playoff debut record in his first game. But that's not the part of his game he wants to focus on, right? He wants to be a playmaker. He wants to get into the paint, collapse the defense, and, you know, pray for his teammates. And it's so strange to, like, see that, like, inversion of the big small, you know, pairing, right? Like, where the small guy wants to get into the paint and the big guy just does all his best work outside. And, like, it looks so awkward when Porzingis posts up. Like, I don't want him to do it any more often. There's so many other big guys where I'm just like, just get in the paint and just do your job there. And with KP, I'm like, get out. Like, we're doing just fine.
Well, you know what's funny is, and I know this is a Clippers podcast, but this we're talking about the Mavs. And they're playing the Mavs. Like, it's interesting because I actually would think that with Luka, at some level, I would want, like, a big who at times would post up and be able to get some points in the paint and let kind of Luka create on the outside. And then the more, to your point, the more I watch them play, I'm like, I don't want Porzingis anywhere near the paint. Just get the hell out and let Luka just get into the paint. And look, I have to say this. There was, like, two possessions in the fourth quarter. Dude, Luka bodied Kawhi. Like, shoulder into Kawhi. I've never seen Kawhi Leonard get, like, pushed off of his spot, because he's honestly one of the strongest players in the NBA. And I'm trying to remember what it was. It might have been, like, 4 minutes left to go in the fourth.
I think I know exactly which play you're talking about, actually.
Put a shoulder into him, yeah. Right? And he got him off, and I think he made a layup.
He got, like, a little banker, right?
Exactly. And I remember what I was like, what in the world is that? Nobody does that to Kawhi. So, look, I certainly don't think by any measure this series is – like a walkthrough. I think maybe we overrate or underrated Dallas, if you will, and overrated the Clippers a bit. Cause I was one of those guys who said, I don't just matchup wise and what we had seen from the regular season, there was no way that Dallas can compete. I think if Luka's going to play that way, and look, they do have shooters, right? You mentioned Curry and a few others. They have guys who can knock them down. If the Clippers don't tighten it up a little bit defensively, I think you might be in for, you know, maybe a 6-game series. I still say 5, but it could be 6.
Yeah, I think the tightening up defensively is the next thing I wanted to focus on, because the one thing the Clippers really did to let Dallas back into the game was they just were so undisciplined. Like, yes, they were, their help side rotations were all over the place, and then they just kept fouling over and over again. And you get that team in the bonus, like, you know, you start seeing free throws fall once or twice, and then all of a sudden it's just much easier for those 3-point looks to go down. And that's like the one thing where I feel like the energy, so the Clippers' energy kind of comes from Patrick Beverley and Montrezl Harrell. You've got Pat in the starting lineup, and you've got Trez coming off the bench. And Trez obviously was on this minutes limit and was not himself yesterday, which is to be expected. He hasn't played a game of basketball since March, right? Like, he missed every single game in the bubble. But then Pat, if you go and get yourself into foul trouble and limit yourself to, what, 20 minutes that game? Yeah, 20 minutes, which is, you know, far below his total. It's not what you expect Beverley to be playing. That's where I think the Clippers were sort of just missing something, right? They just didn't have that juice. And Beverley, I know, was more disappointed in himself than anybody else, because, you know, he prides himself on his individual defense, and that just was not there against Luka.
Defensively, I look, I got to be honest with you, there's one thing that does not concern me about the Clippers. It is defensively. And yeah. I know we get nitpicky here as we cover this team and we see them day in, we used to see them, I guess, day in and day out.
We watch them on TV day in and day out.
You're right. Now we watch them on TV and Zoom. It's a lot of fun. It doesn't concern me that much, because at the end of the day, what NBA basketball is, like, let's just take the regular season. The regular season is really not about the first three quarters, okay? And I used to see them slip up all the time. They got really loose. The rotations were trash. Fourth quarter, they tightened it up. I thought that they also did some of that last night. And I know that Porzingis wasn't in there, but I do think in clutch moments, in moments where you need to get stops, the team just defensively does not concern me at all. I think Luka is going to get his. I don't think you can stop him. That's the one thing I thought basically was, I think they had two guys, maybe three guys, who could defend Luka and limit him. I think we now have to admit, after game one, that's probably not the case anymore. I just don't think you can do it. So I think defensively the switch has to be, and I keep alluding to this, but I think it's absolutely correct, is defensively you have to almost allow Luka to be a scorer and defend off of him and not allow everybody else to go off. I think that has to be the main focus. And look, Doc's a man who can make adjustments. That's what he does. I think he will do it. You know, I love my boy Doc. I'm never going to criticize him. I defensively, it doesn't concern me all that much. And I got to be honest with you, with the way that Zoo played, I feel better about them defensively than I ever have. My number one concern at all times was in the paint with Trez at the end of ball games. I'm curious to see what happens with that moving forward. I don't know if Doc's going to trust Zoo come fourth quarter, crunch time minutes. I think from our experience, the answer is probably no. But I think the fact that he showed that yesterday, I think he could be a big asset to them down the stretch.
Yeah, what's crazy is that Zoo has arguably his best game of the season. You know, one of his better games of the season, let's just say, you know, depending on like how you factor in.
It was a phenomenal game for Zoo.
Yeah, right. I think he had like a perfect shooting game against Dallas in the seeding games, which like may have statistically even better, but whatever, like considering the stakes of this one, this is as good as Zoo's ever been, and he still plays 0 fourth quarter minutes.
I know.
Now I understand Porzingis is out, but like you said, Luka just like got in Kawhi's body. Like, there are things that Zoo does defensively that I can't even believe I'm saying this, but he provides a level of protection behind Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, right? Like, that's important. And I again, nitpicking, because you know, the Clippers, there's so many things they could clean up, and they still win, you know, in a game where Luka puts up 42 points and the Mavericks hit, like, what, how many threes did they hit yesterday? They hit,
They had 12 in the first half, I know that.
They only finished with 15, but,
Yeah. I agree with you. Look, I thought there were times when this whole thing focuses around Luka. It's just the way that it is, okay? But when Luka gets into the paint and Zoo was there, I saw him, it was more, he didn't want to go at him. Mm-hmm. It wasn't what it was when you had Green.
Marcus or Morris, or yeah.
Right, or Morris, or anybody in the middle. He definitely respects Zoo and his size. And I think, I think if you move past this series a little bit, I think you're going to need him to contribute big minutes in the fourth quarter, because I think his size does give the Clippers even more versatility than they've ever had before. You know, don't get me wrong, I love Trez and what he can do, but he defensively, there's some serious liabilities, and he just doesn't provide what Zoo does. I would prefer if Zoo ended up being the closing guy, and I know that it's ridiculous to say, but I just think with the way he's played, it wasn't just last night. Like, we've been screaming about this all year long. Like, there are moments when he plays where it's like, that's the guy that gives you exactly what you don't have. And for some reason, Doc doesn't trust him. It was nice that Doc came out and said, wow, yeah, I'm really impressed with him. This is my guy. Well, if you really are impressed with him, you're going to have to give him 2 seconds in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, the 0-0 next to his, like, box score number in the fourth quarter, it's so ridiculous every single time. It's kind of funny that we've been having the same debate, you know, 5 month hiatus, and we're still having the exact same debate when the games come back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
But yeah, I don't feel very good about Dallas's chances moving forward, because, like you said, the Clippers, there were so many things they could have cleaned up. Like, they weren't even good defensively, and the Dallas couldn't steal this game, right? Like, I feel like everything sort of, you know, the Porzingis ejection being a notable exception to that statement, everything sort of went right for the Mavericks, and they couldn't pull this one out. And I don't trust them in close games against Clippers, because the Clippers consistently know how to execute down the stretch. And Dallas has, it's always been their bugaboo throughout the regular season. Luka gets tired, and they are unable to make plays down the stretch. It sucks, because it could have been a really interesting finish, but, like, you just get to this point where, oh, it's a 4-point game, you know, with 3 minutes left, the Clippers are going to figure this one out, right? There's no entertainment factor left over.
Yeah. Dallas just can't get it done in close games. That's just the data we've seen all year long. It just doesn't work. I have to say something that I noticed, and it's small and maybe not everybody notices it, but really good basketball teams close out halves. And I thought what the Clippers did last night when I think they were down 16 at one point, to make that a ball game at the end of the second half, the first half, I thought was incredibly impressive, because suddenly you're going into the third quarter with a renewed sense of really energy, and you do have a little bit more momentum. That's what good teams do. And I rewatched the game today, and I watched that second quarter twice. And when you can go on a run the way that they can, it just shows me again why they're so much more talented than really anybody else in the NBA. You had multiple guys. Morris is contributing. Kawhi, PG is getting to the rim. Even Zoo had some points. I was really impressed by the close of that second quarter, first half. I think that's what wins you ball games in the NBA. And I really thought that was something to glean from that game, if you will.
Yeah, the thing, I just want the Clippers to take this series seriously, because I think Dallas is better than whoever they're going to face in the second round.
Interesting.
So I just want them to, you know, approach this with I don't even know who they're going to face in the conference finals at this point. It's a giant.
Yeah, that's a toss-up.
Go in the dark. But I do think whoever they face in the conference finals is going to be the best team they face in the playoffs. And I don't think the semifinals are going to be enough of a ramp up to that point. Like, I think this is the toughest out they're going to have, you know, from the first two rounds. So I want them to focus a little bit harder here, just to work out those details. I don't know. It's a very minor.
So you think Dallas is the hardest out as compared to, like, Houston?
Oh, no. I think the conference finals will be the hardest team, but I don't think next round is going to be challenged at all for the Clippers.
Gotcha.
So even I don't. Even Utah, Denver, I don't buy it.
I'm picking Utah, Denver. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess that's fair. Yeah. I guess. I mean, the finals is a problem. So, like, I don't know what that looks like at this point.
Is it Orlando? Is
right? Yeah, they're popping in there somehow. The Lakers always concern me for the Clips because of the size. Mm-hmm. And look, you saw that tonight against Portland, like. the size that the Lakers have is, it's incredible with McGee and with JaVale and with Howard and obviously with AD. That was always my concern. But the more I look at the Lakers, I don't see how, even if they have the size advantage, how they could potentially beat a Clippers team with who they have coming off the bench. There's nobody there that can compete with them. So you might be right. It's incredible. The more I think about this now, it might be Dallas. When you said that initially, I was like, that's a ridiculous statement. But I think you might be right.
I have turned you around to my line of thinking.
You generally do.
Okay. So if you're Dallas, what can you try to improve upon going into game two? Just keeping your emotions better? Like, what else?
I think you can't allow Porzingis, obviously, to be thrown out of the ballgame. I liked what they did. Getting off to that slow start was obviously tough. Turnovers were brutal in the first half. You obviously have to stay away from that. I think that was Luka's most highest turnovers that he's had in his career.
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's 11. I would hope it's the highest he's had in his career. Yeah.
Right? So I think obviously turnovers, look against a Clippers team that obviously is handsy and can capitalize on that kind of stuff. You have to, you almost, if you're Dallas, you almost have to be perfect to beat this Clippers team. So you got to stay away from the turnovers. And quite frankly, I would allow Luka to do more. Just give him the ball and let him go. You know, like we get in this weird mindset, and it's not anybody's fault, but like I see it in the NBA all the time. Like, even saw it tonight with Dame. I'm like, give Dame the ball, okay, and let him go to work. Because Dame is actually somewhat in not the same level as Luka, because I think Luka is the greatest player in the NBA. They can still, these guys can still create. And I think at times, even with like the way that Porzingis plays, we sometimes get in, Dallas gets into that mode of like, let's let Porzingis get his shots up, whatever it may be. But it doesn't always come off of a Luka playmake, right? I think you have to put the ball in Luka's hands and basically tell the NBA, look, this is the future of the league. I hope you can stop it.
You know what might help him continue to go off is if Doc Rivers keeps playing Reggie Jackson.
You didn't like that Red Deck, seeing that those tweets, people were upset.
That was the most frustrating part of the first game. I don't understand why he gets minutes, especially when he's not making shots. Like, okay, you put him in there, you think maybe he hits a couple threes, you know, saves some minutes for your other perimeter guys. If he's not making shots, what are you doing?
I don't get it. He was 0-for-5, correct?
He has a maddening habit, too, of, like, finishing out quarters with shot clock violations. It's a weird thing. It's a very weird thing, but yeah, the Reggie thing is not working for me. I get he had a nice start, you know, in those first couple games after the buyout. There's a reason he was available.
Yep, completely accurate.
Figuring that out.
I think you and I talked about this the other day on another podcast, like shortening rotations. Mm-hmm. Okay, so like it does happen in the playoffs, and I don't like even in the bubble. Like, I'm not quite like there's more guys even playing than I normally see. I don't think Reggie Jackson, I don't think he should be playing significant minutes down the stretch. I just don't. And I don't know what the rotation looks like. I mean, if you're going to remove him, but every time I watch the guy play, I'm not impressed with him. I think defensively, you made that point yesterday where it's like, why in the world is he in here for a defensive possession? And if he's not going to get buckets, I'm not quite sure what he's providing. I think it's close to nothing.
Yeah, and it's like very nitpicky because this is a contending team. They don't really have flaws, right? Like, this is a very
–
This is all we have. Yes. But I just
– Yes.
The one concern I have about the Clippers is that they don't optimize their lineup combinations. That's literally my only concern because I think they have everything available for them if they just play their best players maximally. But right. I'm a little concerned that they're not going to find the combinations that work best. And this is just a little thing that like adds some extra concern there, because if you think that for some reason Reggie Jackson is helping your team, that's a weird thought. And I'm not sure I agree with that.
Right. No, I agree. Look, but I'll come back to what I said at the beginning. Mm-hmm. I do have trust in Doc, and I think he'll figure it out. I think that he'll be able to shorten it a little bit, because I just don't think in this series, I think we're going to see that Reggie Jackson is not the guy that you can have moving forward. I just don't think you can play him significant minutes because I think he hurts you.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, historically with the Clippers, Doc has had this reputation of shortening his rotation too much, right?
Right.
Just a wee bit too much, right? Relying on like 6.5, 7 guys for some reason. And we saw it in the playoffs actually last year too, where, you know, the Clippers have been playing 2 5-man units for the majority of the regular season. Then he cut it down to like 7-8 against the Warriors, which was very clearly the right move. They outperformed expectations by any, you know, reasonable standard in that series. So, you know, there's more than enough reason to believe that Doc will figure this out, and that the reason they're playing Reggie Jackson is just because Pat Beverly was in foul trouble, or Landry Shamet has a foot injury, right? Like, nothing to really worry about. Again, I think it's incredibly important that the Clippers won this game without playing their best, right? They were sloppy. Yeah. They didn't have their identity on the defensive side of the ball, which I believe is, you know, what's most important to them. They let Luka be everything he wanted to be, and it still didn't work, right? So,
and they still won.
Yeah, exactly. So good feelings, you know, ahead for the Clippers, right? Like, this is not this is not a worrying podcast. It's just a, you know, this is not the toughest team they're going to play at some point.
It's a fine-tuning podcast.
Yeah, exactly. That's fine-tuning.
That's what we're here for. And let's, you know, if you want to really highlight some of the – make look, I thought Kawhi was pretty darn good yesterday, okay? 29-12-6. That'll get it done. Morris was fantastic. I mean, they couldn't stop talking about him after that game. So, you know, I think there was a lot of good that came from that game. I just think they started fast, allowed a big run from Dallas, which happens, and they allowed Luka to be a playmaker. I'm very curious to see what they do with Porzingis once he plays a full game, I might add, in game two. There's some adjustments to be made, but if I am a Clippers fan, in no way am I concerned about this team in this round. I'll just say it. I'm not concerned about this team for the rest of the postseason until maybe they get to the NBA Finals, because everything that I have seen in the past 2 days from the Western Conference is there is no team that is as deep and has as much talent as the Clippers do. And I don't think it's particularly close.
All right. So prediction for game two, what do we got? How much are they winning by?
12. My least favorite thing in the world. My least favorite thing in the world is predicting scores. When I used to have my own radio show and people would call in and say, "Joe, give me a number."
Okay, let's predict like the tenor of the game.
Is it gonna
shoot out, or like, you know, what's gonna change from game one? You think they're gonna manage to put a dent into Luka's stats? Like, is Porzingis gonna show up, or
I think Luka will probably I think he'll probably shoot worse. I think they'll do a better job defensively on him. I also think it'll be a better defensive game, a good game of adjustments for the Clippers. I see the Clips coming out much stronger defensively, not giving up 12 threes in the first half, and quite frankly, cruising to a decently easy win. I thought that game might have had something to do with jitters. It's weird to talk about an Orlando bubble where there are no fans, but I do think there is something about that when this team, who is very clearly trying to win a championship, and you have guys like Lou Will, you know, who are on that team who have never won one. I think there's something to be said to that. I think it'll be a decently easy win, and I think they'll wrap it up relatively quickly.
You still think this is going to go 5 games or 4?
Oh, this is not a 4-game series. No, that's ridiculous. So thank you. Trying to tell me Luka's going to not win one game, please. You know how I feel about him.
All right. Well, I guess it's not going to be game two that the Dallas Mavericks win. So on that note, thank you so much for hopping on, Joe. And we'll see you later in the series or later in the playoffs, I guess.
Look forward to doing it again. Thank you.
Thanks to Joe for taking the time to talk about game two. And thank you to all of you for listening. Hope you enjoyed my first episode on the Eclipse Nation feed. I'll be back throughout the rest of the series and hopefully longer in the playoffs to talk about this team. Take care and go Clippers.